Our colleague Brian Spiegel lives in Beijing, and Sunday night he was at home checking social media. In cities across China, protests against the country's strict COVID rules were breaking out. Crowds had gathered in Xinjiang, in Shanghai, and Brian was looking to see whether there'd be protests in Beijing too.
Lo and behold, Sunday night at about 10:30 p.m., we start seeing these images flowing in on Twitter and elsewhere of, at that point, a relatively small gathering. So I get on my bike right away and I go out to see what's going on.
Brian caught up with the crowd by the Liang Machao River. There were hundreds of protesters, and they were on the move.
They basically just start walking on the streets, completely unobstructed. Traffic is closed down, and they're chanting, "We don't want PCR tests, we want freedom."
Eventually, Brian ended up at Beijing's Third Ring Road.
I took the bike up onto an overpass, a walkway over the Third Ring Road, to kind of look out over the scene of what was going on. And I could see protesters kind of out in front of me on the ground, and they were kind of surrounded by police. But then the most remarkable thing that I saw was that all of the Beijingers who had come out specifically in their cars, driving in the southbound lanes of the Third Ring Road, honking their horns in support of the protesters. It was deafening. What that really signaled for me was that there's people who are willing to take to the streets and risk everything to be arrested. But then these people have tremendous amounts of support. People willing to get out of bed to drive down on a highway at 2:30 in the morning to honk their horns in support of these guys. In all my years in Beijing, I've never seen anything like it.
And these protests by students, white-collar workers, service workers, are creating an unprecedented challenge for China's leader, Xi Jinping.
What was really striking was to hear on the streets of Beijing people calling for effectively the ouster of Xi Jinping from being leader of China. And that is, saying that on the streets of Beijing would have been unimaginable 6 weeks ago.
Welcome to The Journal, our show about money, business, and power. I'm Kate Linebaugh. It's Tuesday, November 29th. Coming up on the show, China's biggest protests in decades.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. If you're like most people, you've had your fair share of financial questions. Questions like, will you be able to afford a third kid? Will you be able to do everything you want when you retire? What if you outlive your savings? Empower knows these questions can be stressful, so they're here to help answer your what-ifs and empower what's next. Join 18 million Americans and take control of your financial future. Tap the banner to learn more or visit empower.com.
The event that set off the weekend's protests in China happened late last week in Xinjiang, a region in the country's far west. A fire broke out in an apartment building.
So, as part of the COVID lockdowns, many people in Xinjiang have been confined to their apartments for 3 months, effectively not allowed to go outside. And in Xinjiang, there was a fire in one of the apartment buildings. And while we don't know all of the details of what exactly transpired, what seems very clear at this point is that the fire department was obstructed from getting in to stop the fire in a timely manner.
Local officials said 10 people died in the fire and that parked cars had prevented rescuers from reaching the building. But across China, people had their own ideas about what might have caused the tragedy, laying the blame on the government's COVID restrictions.
What we do know is across China, many people are being literally locked in their buildings. There are many reports, well-documented instances of fire escapes being chained locked, for example. And I think people around China are sitting in their homes, many of them actually locked in their apartments. They're looking at the house fire, the apartment fire in Xinjiang, and saying, how do we know our apartment building isn't next?
The tragedy resonated across China, where people have endured on and off COVID lockdowns for years now. It's all part of a policy known as zero COVID.
What is zero COVID?
So the government wants COVID to be at zero. That's their stated goal. They want no community-level transmission of COVID. And if there is community-level transmission, they want to cut those lines of transmission as quickly as possible, put everybody who's been exposed to the virus in quarantine to make sure that they effectively know where the virus is at all times.
What has it been like for the average Chinese person living under this policy?
I'll give you a sample of what my life looks like as an urban person living in China. You get up, you start the day, and one of the things that you have to first check overnight is, have I been quarantined? Has my building been quarantined? And what that means is I went downstairs last weekend to go for a run on a Saturday morning, and all of a sudden there's a person standing there in a hazmat suit at the bottom of my building. And he tells me, oh, you can't go out. You're stuck here for 3 days. Or 7 days, or whatever the number is, not because there was a COVID case in my building, but because a COVID case had been found in a building that was adjacent to mine.
But the restrictions go even further than that. Brian needs to get tested for COVID every few days.
In Beijing, you're forced by the government to go out and get a PCR test. You line up at booths that are installed by the government, kind of on streets around the city. They check your information and they swab you. And that then is linked to an app on your smartphone or a program on your smartphone, which is your key to be able to do anything.
If Brian wants to go out to eat in a restaurant, see a movie, or just pick up a coffee, he has to swipe his health code. And if it turns out that someone else in that restaurant or movie theater later tested positive for COVID, Brian could be tracked down and sent to a quarantine center.
And why does the government say this is necessary?
The government's point of view is, we are saving lives. COVID, in their view, is very dangerous. And I think also in the Chinese context, what they would argue is that, you know, our healthcare system in China is not prepared to deal with, you know, an outbreak like this, you know, in the same way that the West could deal with it.
But years of restrictions have taken their toll. COVID lockdowns have also hurt China's economy.
Everybody's buckling down. You don't know if you're going to be hauled off. You don't know if you're going to be confined to your house. And don't forget, many people who are confined to their house, for them, that means they can't work. The restaurants are closed. If you're a waiter in a restaurant or you're a mom-and-pop shop running a restaurant, which a lot of people in China do, you're not going to work. You're not making any money. You're burning through your savings.
Between COVID lockdowns and a flagging economy, frustration was high. And then that fire broke out in Xinjiang. Very quickly, people in Urumqi, the region's capital, took to the streets.
The pictures started flowing out from Urumqi pretty quickly after the fire. People demanding, what is the government doing? Why are people dying in these sorts of circumstances? And why have we been kept at home for 3 months?
But the protests didn't stay in far western Urumqi. Over the weekend, they spread. On Saturday, people in Shanghai gathered for a vigil to honor those who died in the Xinjiang fire. But the vigil soon turned into a protest. Someone in the crowd would chant, "Communist Party." The crowd would respond, "Get out." Soon, there were more protests. In Nanjing, Chengdu, Hong Kong, and Beijing. And complaints about zero COVID merged with bigger grievances against government control and censorship.
Many people, when they're going to these protests, they're holding up blank pieces of white paper. And effectively, they're symbolic of the fact that we can't say anything in China right now, so we're going to hold up a blank piece of white paper and come and arrest us for that. We also heard other things that were kind of funny, like because people were so tightly controlled, they'd be yelling on the streets, "Please give us more PCR tests." We're so happy with the zero COVID policy. In almost a real sarcastic and absolutely a sarcastic way. Come and arrest us for that. So what I took away from that is, yes, these protests on their face are about COVID, but they're about much more than COVID also, because COVID policy has become so intertwined with President Xi himself.
Brian was surprised to hear protesters calling out the country's president by name. In Shanghai, for example, protesters shouted, "Xi Jinping, step down." And in China, calling out the president comes with big risks. That's coming up.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. If you're like most people, you've had your fair share of financial questions. Questions like, will you be able to afford a third kid? Will you be able to do everything you want when you retire? What if you outlive your savings? Empower knows these questions can be stressful, so they're here to help answer your what-ifs and empower what's next. Join 18 million Americans and take control of your financial future. Tap the banner to learn more or visit empower.com.
This episode is brought to you by C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
When Brian was out on the streets of Beijing on Sunday night, one of the things that struck him was how the police were hanging back.
What I saw on Sunday night was police who were clearly seeking to avoid any escalation. They weren't the special forces of the police force, which you see sometimes in Chinese protests. These were, as far as I could tell, the normal cops, mixed in with plainclothes security agents in the crowd. There wasn't significant amounts of violence on either side. And so that was day one.
But when Brian went out the next night, the police were out in force.
There was word or attempts to organize a second protest yesterday. And they were going to, I think, march from a subway station, maybe a half a mile south to this bridge, which has also become symbolic among political activists in China. And as I was pulling up to the subway station, I get out of the taxi, and on each corner of this intersection, there are, you know, several, four, five, six police cars there, flashing lights. There's buses there that are commonly used in China. If a protest happens, people will be pulled into the buses and detained and hauled off to jail that way. That protest never got off the ground, as far as I could tell, at least as of the time I left. What that says to me is just how hard it's going to be to organize, to replicate what happened on Sunday night.
What are the protesters risking by being out there?
They're risking everything. They're risking everything. What we know is that activists in China, political activists in China, have faced incredibly lengthy jail terms. This is one of the first things, and I remember back to 2012 when Xi Jinping took over power, there was still some political activism that was happening in China at the time. Those people, many, many of these dissidents, of these activists, were rounded up and, you know, all subsequently given jail terms of 10 years, 20 years, whatever it would be. And it got to the point where really you were in Beijing and you were thinking, is there any activist community left? Is there any dissent left? And really, until very recently, the answer to that was no. And that's the other thing that has made all of this so surprising.
How big of a problem are these protests for Xi Jinping?
They are the biggest source of political opposition that he has faced at a grassroots level since he took power 10 years ago. We haven't seen simultaneous protests like this in China in decades. With that said, I think it's important to be cautious about this. Most political analysts who studied the Chinese political system do not believe that these protests, these demonstrations pose any imminent threat to President Xi Jinping's, you know, grip on power, to his rule. And then one of the really important things to think about is President Xi has a tremendous amount of support within the political system itself and within the bureaucracy. And he has spent a lot of time and a lot of energy consolidating that support over the past 10 years. And there is no evidence at this point that's come out, outward evidence at least, that that support is coming undone.
So why should he be concerned about them?
We're talking about the short term. A Chinese leader cannot allow or is unwilling to allow protests to continue for substantial amounts of time. When we think back to the 1989 protests in Tiananmen Square, the student protests in Tiananmen Square, they went on ultimately for, you know, many weeks. And so I think that what Xi Jinping really needs to control is the length of time that this political activism goes on, and to ensure that it doesn't spread further to encompass other grievances that people are feeling, whether those are economic grievances, all sorts of things, that you just don't have more and more people coming out on the street.
One possible option for ending the protests would be to roll back some of the zero COVID policy. And the government has tried to do that. Earlier this month, it put in place a plan that would take a more targeted approach to battling COVID. But on the ground, not much has actually changed, because many parts of China are facing outbreaks right now.
COVID zero has been so closely linked with, like, President Xi's personal, you know, seal of approval. This is his policy. So how does he find a way to appease the protesters, to tweak the policy enough to get the people off the streets, but at the same time not saying that zero COVID was a failure?
What would you expect the next steps to be on the part of the authorities? To crack down on social media, to keep bringing this strong police presence to meetup sites? Like, how do you see it playing out over the next days?
So I think we should look at how China tends to respond to these sorts of things. There's nothing been this big in a long time, but we do know how they tend to respond, and I think it can inform how we're thinking about it today. I think what we can expect is organizers of the Sunday night protest in Beijing and elsewhere, they will be rounded up. They will be identified and arrested. We will also see a general police presence in the city around certain specific sites, the sites of the Sunday protest, around the bridge that I mentioned earlier, more than likely around Tiananmen Square and around the universities.
Asked about the protests, a foreign ministry spokesman defended the country's COVID policies and said that the rights of Chinese citizens must be exercised within the country's laws. Meanwhile, Brian has reported that people say the state is using its surveillance systems to identify individual protesters.
What's the thing that will stay with you about these protests?
The thing that I'll never forget about these protests is to see young people in China today are still politically engaged. Very much so. I think in some of the China watching community, there was a feeling in recent years that they were disengaged. That certainly there's been a rise in nationalism in China for a long time. And I think that translated into many people feeling like young people in China are behind the party 100%. They are unquestioning in their loyalty to President Xi. That's not true. People in China, young people in China especially, are thinking critically about these sorts of issues. And I think what was so striking to me to think about when I was out on Sunday night and I was meeting people who were 20, 21, 25 years old, they weren't born when Tiananmen Square happened. They grew up in an era of extreme censorship in China. It's very difficult to find videos. It's impossible on the Chinese internet to find a video of the Tiananmen Square events. Yet these people were just as in tune with conceptions of rights, with conceptions of what they believed they deserved in terms of rule of law. So that's going to stay with me. And I think that what we should all take away from it, beyond trying to predict how this is going to play out, is that young people in China are engaged. They care. And they're willing to risk a lot for it.
That's all for today, Tuesday, November 29th. The Journal is a co-production of Gimlet and The Wall Street Journal. Additional reporting in this episode by Wenxin Fan, Rachel Liang, and Lingling Wei. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.